Part 3, Chapter 4. The Genesis of the Living Body of the Spiritual School. Let us now go further into the formation and development of the system, previously explained from different perspectives, which manifests itself as the magnetic sphere of the twofold spiritual school. We will do this in view of the seven phases already mentioned in Chapter 2 of Part 3. First, there is the beginning of group development. This is neither spectacular nor strange. One can observe the same in each field of dialectical activity, for instance, by creating a working apparatus. Such attempts have been made countless times during the course of world history. There is so much established, so much organized on different planes of life in this world, that it does not attract attention any longer, that sometimes people shrug their shoulders and speak slightingly about it. Well, the creation of the group of the spiritual school begins in the same way, with the founding of a working apparatus by those who are predisposed to be gnostically sensitive. Such an activity proceeds from the impulse of an inner desire, from the blood of birth, from karmic influences of the microcosm, and from experience. This beginning is quite ordinary, quite modest. In a little rented room, and the audience is not at all in a force field. All we can say is that there is only a poor little light towards which a few are attracted, and those few are frequently not the best. There are among them a great many lapis spitalaeficus makers, as the classical Rosicrucians said, spiritual swankers. The more serious wait first for the cat to jump. They have had many experiences and they shrink from more. Yet, the beginners have a basis. If it is good, they will keep it by showing their new attitude of life, and very slowly it will grow. Gradually, a deeper interest will develop. The second phase attracts no more attention than the first. Its beginning is, at least outwardly, also an ordinary event. Those who had taken the initiative have created a group of sympathizers whose interest seems to be deeper and whose desire for liberating life has been aroused so that they are willing to make a few, albeit material, sacrifices. With their help, own accommodation can be found. With about 15 sympathizers, we rented in 1924 part of the house at Bakkenessergracht 13 in Haarlem, the Netherlands, which was then totally different from the way it is now. Here it was possible to furnish a little temple and in the back of the house a meeting room. All this on a very modest scale indeed. It was here, in our own surroundings, that an orderly tempo could be introduced into the work, that the work could develop its own necessary rhythm despite all the disappointments that were so often met, especially in the beginning. Disappointments when, for instance, nobody came when the hall was ready and the meeting had been announced. However, something we now call a force field began to develop in spite of many of such disappointments. A force field is a magnetic field, and we will try to give you an idea of it. This cannot be complete, for our knowledge is not absolute, and we have insufficient technical terminology at our disposal. A magnetic field is a radiation field of extremely powerful energy. We discern in the gnosis a sevenfold radiation field. If such a field is to be complete, there must be seven cooperating force waves, and so seven functions exist. Moreover, an attracting and a repelling force are active in a magnetic field. Unlike is attracted and like is repelled. By this twofold movement of attraction and repulsion, an enormous rotation comes about, as well as a great friction. Seven rays touch us. Consequently, seven rotations come into movement. The phenomena which are then going to manifest are 1. Force, or in other words, electricity. 2. Light. 3. Heat. 4. Sound. 5. Cohesion. 6. Life. 7. Movement. In dialectics, we also speak of a magnetic radiation field. Life would not be possible if we did not receive it from a magnetic field, so there are a sevenfold dialectical magnetic field and a sevenfold magnetic field of the gnosis. You know and experience the results of the ordinary magnetic field of dialectics. You live in, from, and through this field. Your metabolism and your cellular formation are determined by it. The density of your body, the cohesion, the degree of heat in your system, and all phenomena of force, as electricity, light, sound, heat, etc., are determined by the magnetic field of nature. When we live in a magnetic field, we are magnetized by it, and consequently, we cause a new magnetic field to come into existence in accordance with the great magnetic field that set us in movement. For instance, you see light, and you, yourself, also produce light. Your whole system, with its internal secretion, has been shaped to catch the seven rays of energy of the Earth cosmos, to transmute them into seven conditions of force and faculty. You need them to do your life's housekeeping. The seven-branched candelabrum in your head sanctuary burns through those fires. The seven cerebral cavities that constitute the candelabrum produce a particular vibration and light. They represent the seven conditions of the seven cosmic fires. The question has been asked why the school always spoke of an electromagnetic radiation field with the stress on electromagnetic. We had to do so because the magnetic field of the gnosis, as far as it could be manifested in the force field of the school, could in the beginning free only one of the seven Gnostic powers. Therefore, only an electromagnetic faculty existed at that time, an electric touch of the gnosis. Perhaps it will now be clear what we mean by the second phase of development of the spiritual school. For in this second phase, the United Group begins to show something of deeper interest in the gnosis, not only at the meetings, but also outside of them. One begins to take it into account in one's own life and tries to live from the experience of the rational moral touch. Consequently, the magnetic sternum opens, and so the rose of the heart is influenced by the first force of the sevenfold Gnostic spirit. In this way, an approach to the gnosis comes about in the group. In this way, the unlike is attracted. We are very unlike with respect to the gnosis, yet we are attracted by the gnosis. Something of the electromagnetic force is freed in us, is burnt into our heart blood via the sternum by means of the rose. By this contact, we are, as unequals, attracted by the gnosis. The opposite, the repelling force, and so the rotation, cannot yet develop, so that in the second phase, the force field is still one-sided. It is nourishing, but not yet liberating. It is obvious what the third phase will bring. By the attracting power of the force field, Gnostic nourishment enters the pupil, but also a state of satiation is reached. Nourishment and satiation, as always, are only of use when the food can be digested and be taken into the system of life. Therefore, many pupils often show a dejected reaction in the transitional period from the second to the third phase of development. Indeed, they hunger after the gnosis, they do yearn after the touch of the spirit, but only in a one-sided negative way. They cannot or will not yet use, in a positive way, the spiritual food they have received for their attitude of life. They are hampered by their blood states or by the grip of the powers of the reflection sphere because they still stand too strongly in the magnetic field of the Earth. The lights of interest of such pupils are continuously switching on and off. The interest lasts as long as they hunger. As soon as they are satisfied, it disappears again. This condition portrays a steady ebb and flow, and means a stagnation on the path of preparation. Therefore, the leaders of the group will not cease, with all the means and the dynamism at their disposal, to stimulate those who are in the interested stage to use the received Gnostic food and to transmute it into new powers and possibilities in a conscious self-freemasonry. After many pains and miseries, this transmutation process sets in, first with a few and then, through their example, with ever more pupils. They will receive understanding and will practice the directedness towards the gnosis, and so a new attitude of life, first in a very hesitating and elementary manner, but later progressively deepening. The unlike which was attracted by the gnosis is repelled in a persistent, serious attempt to gain equilibrium with the gnosis. In such a way, the necessary rotation of forces, the great wheel of Genesis, comes into movement. A circulation of matter takes place by which new Gnostic possibilities are liberated. An important change takes place. The radiation of the magnetic body of the group begins to show the signs of this development, and it is evident that the group is seized and driven along by an ever greater force, because in the magnetic system of the group, some Gnostic intentions and functions manifest themselves. In a practical sense, one could now speak of an electromagnetic radiation field of the Gnosis in the nascent spiritual school. Then the fourth phase begins. The group increases, and animated by the example of many pupils, it shows an intense deepening of insight and directedness by which the Gnostic wheel rotates ever more quickly. The rational moral touch enters like the strokes of a sword. The Gnosis seizes the pupils with ever greater force. Each of them knows that the food that is given should not only be accepted but should also be used in a Gnostic sense as living material of renovation. In this phase, the new attitude of life is an imperative demand for all participants in the group. And because a city cannot be built in one day, a process develops. In the school, the I-centrality is attacked in all possible ways and placed in the light of the demands of the path. Each one exerts himself and tries to make something of it, tries to come to a certain realization in his own being. If there are some who fall out of tune, then they are unmasked and exposed before themselves and the whole group. Then the sacrifice to the rose of the heart, the self. Surrender to the inner Christ is demanded. The pupils begin to understand something of the ineffable, merciful wonder of the alchemical wedding of Christian Rosicross, of which the classical Rosicrucians testify, of the immense salvation of transfiguration, of the mortal soul that can win eternal life in the course of time. Guided by this growing insight, driven by a deepening yearning for salvation, and with an eager willingness to sacrifice the self, the new attitude of life is practiced seriously. The significance of this attitude of life is understood more deeply. The liberating force resolved by it is fully realized and extensively considered. We dare to speak now of a life according to the Sermon on the Mount, of an exceptional attitude of life. Many begin to realize that such an attitude of life is possible, and they meet it in gladness and thankfulness as a liberating possibility. The magnetic wheel increases its rotations. An enormous power accumulates in the force field, the still vague, not yet outlined body of the spiritual school. This body is like a cloud, and we may speak of an electromagnetic field only. However, in this indication, immense possibilities and a grand promise are hidden. It will become light, there will be heat and sound as heavenly music, there will be cohesion, life, and movement. Suddenly we see how light breaks through like the dawning of daybreak, like the rising aurora at the top of the magnetic body, at the north pole of the magnetic sphere of the spiritual school.